Saturday Coffee Clutch. And it is the Saturday Coffee Clutch with Heather Lofthouse and yours truly, Robert Reich. Heather, happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Happy to be here. Should we dive in?
I think we should dive in. What do we have on store today? I mean, it's been a big week. What are we going to talk about?
I think we got to talk about TikTok, what's happening with our government and our billionaires around that. I think we should dive into Trump's criminal cases, all the delays that are happening. Mm. Our thoughts on whether the election will be contested. I think that's been interesting. And you've done some polls and we'd like to see what our audience has weighed in with. And then let's talk about Bernie Sanders proposing that there should be more 32-hour work weeks.
I love
rather than 40.
I just love Bernie Sanders. But we'll get to that. I guess that's later in our clutch. So you want to start with TikTok?
Yes, let's talk. So okay, the House is banning things. What's going to happen?
The House has actually voted to ban TikTok from the United States as long as it's owned by Chinese investors. And presumably what the House is worried about, and this is both Republicans and Democrats, very interesting. Yep. It's not along party lines. They're worried about privacy, American data falling into the hands of the Chinese, technology falling into the hands of the Chinese.
Including as it relates to the election, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. And then in the Senate has not yet decided what to do. And again, it's all over the place in terms of the senators. It's not a Republican versus Democrat. But I'm gonna say something, Heather. I don't know whether you agree with me, but I think this is all baloney. I mean, this is just, you know, it doesn't really matter. The people who are lining up to buy TikTok, if TikTok has to divest in the United States, are all these, you know, right-wing billionaires.
And yes.
I mean, I don't trust right-wing billionaires to guard my privacy and to prevent me from being manipulated by dangerous lies any more than I trust Chinese investors. I mean,
I know.
It's a completely bonkers choice.
It's not good. And I think it's so important. I mean, I know you said this on Joy Reid the other night on MSNBC. You've put it on your Substack. But basically, what is worse? What are we looking at? And you're doing this thing that you often do where you reframe it for us all. And you say the way the mainstream media is talking about this is not necessarily the way we need to be thinking about it.
Well, also politicians. It just should not be China versus billionaires in the United States. It really should be. We shouldn't even separate out TikTok from X, former Twitter and Facebook and all the other big platforms, because they are all scraping our private data. They are all utilizing our private data. They are all manipulating us with lies, some more than others. And I think, you know what, the answer here for all of them is to treat them as either public utilities, right, or as public carriers and have regulations in the public interest.
Right. But these are such unprecedented times. I mean, and I watch my kid, if he gets a phone that has TikTok on it, I mean, he goes to it. He's 11. This social media is everywhere. Where does government stop? Where does the private sector begin? Where do my choices, you know, come in with what I want to view online? But it's so scary. We need to be careful and taking all our data and doing nefarious, illegal, you know, democracy breaking activities with it. It's not good.
Well, it's terrible. This is why, I mean, if we were having this discussion 50 years ago, there'd be no question. You have regulation.
God, we would have been so smart if we had anticipated this 50 years ago.
You know, 50 years ago, I was 27. I kind of thought about TikTok a little bit. And you, 50 years ago, Heather,
exactly. We won't get it.
But listen, seriously, I mean, you've got, these are monopolies. They are networks. They're network monopolies. That is, if you want to use them, you've got to get in them and you've got to be a member of them. You've got to participate in them. And this is classic old antitrust. But the alternative to antitrust, to breaking them up, was to regulate. And common carrier regulation and public utility regulation, there's a lot of law about this. Why don't we do that? I mean, why should we worry about China versus Musk?
Yeah, no, I know. Well, let's not get into it on the clutch. We don't need to get into the legal stuff on the clutch. What I do want to get into is all these delays for Trump, for the Trump trial. So he's been requesting delays and he's getting some. And then we got good news about Fani Willis in Georgia. What's happening?
Well, what's happening is that Trump's legal strategy, obviously, is to delay until hopefully for him, at least from his point of view, he becomes president and he can stop the federal the federal cases and he can manipulate the state cases. That's his plan. And, you know, Heather, I was looking at tapes of Trump in 2016. When he was running in 2016, contrasting them this time, he is much more desperate right now. I mean, he knows that, so much more turns on whether he is elected in terms of his future, his ability to do business, his money, his everything else, his reputation. So he is really on the line in a way he was not on the line in 2016, when it was kind of a lark. You know, he didn't, it was all about building his brand. This time, it's fundamental to his, you know, existence, and it's really, really interesting to watch Trump 2016 versus Trump 2024. Yeah. But it is all about delay, and what we need to be aware of. And this is actually interesting and important. If you look at the Supreme Court cases, and I'm going there because the biggest Trump case is the insurrection case, and whether, you know, the Supreme Court took the decision whether a president is immune, which is ridiculous. I mean, a president can't be immune from all criminal liability. But anyway, the Supreme Court took it. But here's the interesting thing. If you look at how quickly the Supreme Court in the past has issued opinions after oral argument, in Bush v. Gore, Bush v. Gore was argued December 11th, 2000. Mm-hmm. And the opinion was issued the next day, along with a dissent. Yep. The Pentagon Papers, another very important case, was argued June 26, 1971, had huge implications, and the decision was issued 4 days later. The court, if it really wanted to, could put this on a fast track. Here, it's now, it's already decided, it's going to hear arguments in May, but there's no reason it can't come out with an opinion in 3 or 2 or 4 days.
And now, you said if it wanted to, I think that's accurate, but also if Trump wanted it to, I think is what's key here.
Well, obviously, Trump has some influence in terms of the Trump appointees, Clarence Thomas, the Republicans on the court, and that's the real issue. I mean, are they going to indirectly delay things and give him a get out of jail free pass?
I feel like we need a moment of silence for 14 section 3. I mean, that I still am not over the interpretation of that. I read something about that in The Atlantic the other day, too.
Yes. Well, Heather, you've got to move on. I'm sorry.
I was
one of the main proponents of section 3, you know, of the 14th Amendment.
You were early days. You were out ahead.
But you
were out ahead.
If the Supreme Court goes out of its way to say essentially it will never be used for the time being until we get to court, let's forget
now,
that.
You said Trump, he's desperate, but he's also kind of frantic. He feels, and he's flip-flopping, and it's fascinating watching him. I mean, it's always fascinating and disgusting watching him. But you put out a poll this week, and we got to hear from so many of you on it. So thank you for always weighing in on the polls. But you asked, if Trump loses and it's very close, will the election be contested? Your options were no. You said yes in the House, yes in the courts, yes in the streets, and other. And the one that got the most votes, surprisingly and scarily, was?
It will be decided, or it will be hashed out on the street if this is contested by Trump. If it's a close election, almost 3,000 people took part in this poll. This is on Substack last Wednesday. I've never seen that many And this is the, you know, this is the equivalent. I mean, it's not like a national poll, but in terms of numbers, it certainly is. And 1% said he would not contest if it's close, but 24% said yes in and through the courts. As you said, 10% said yes through the House of Representatives, but 47% said it was going to be hashed out on the street, which is not a good sign. If most people feel like this is going to be a matter of violence or Trump, I mean, I don't know exactly what to make of that. The House is interesting because I think that the Republicans and the Trump Republicans already have a plan to, if they prevail in the House, if they keep the House, they might want to use the House and the 12th Amendment again to toss it back to the House.
Yeah.
And if there are that many, I mean, you know, this is, remember, last time around, it was 44,000 votes, Heather, in three states that flipped the Electoral College toward Biden. 44,000.
Yep.
That's really, that's too close for comfort.
So if I had a magic wand, we'd, you know, get so many votes that it wouldn't be logical to contest. But nothing's logical anymore. So maybe I'm just full of it.
No, he's going to contest. I don't think if
no matter
he loses, there's no question about it. And I don't even know that he's going to contest if the election is close. I think that his supporters, you know, he's basically poisoned the mind of America to think that elections, particularly among Republicans, elections cannot be trusted. And that's the most dangerous thing he has done.
I know. And Elon Musk has helped with that. I mean, it's him, but then the trickle down effects of his power. It's bolstered by a lot of important people in a lot of visible places.
Of course, and Fox News and all the right wing media.
All of them.
So this is kind of a, you know, I am old enough to remember. I love that phrase. I'm old enough to remember.
I'm like, here we go. Let's travel back in time.
When, you know, when there was something about a vote where the loser was, you know, lost graciously. And
of course, I'm old enough to remember that. Come on, don't take that away from me. That is not that far ago, long ago.
Well, it should not be.
There was civility in governance.
But
one thing I liked from the week was that Vice President Kamala Harris went to Minnesota and visited a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic, a first for a VP or a president to do. And that, again, is important as it relates to women's autonomy. We have, you know, our reproductive health, and it's going to matter in November. It was very cool to see.
It's very, very symbolically important. As symbolically important, if not more, than Joe Biden walking on a picket line. Because it means that the vice president is using the authority of the White House, the president, vice president's office, to say to the American people, abortion should be a right. Reproductive rights are very close to the core of what we value in terms of the Constitution and privacy, and they are under assault, obviously.
Yeah, it's horrific. One other thing that I think that's been interesting is watching Trump. So Biden has what are called policies. I'm not sure if Donald has gotten the memo on those. But so Biden's doing all this stuff to address all these policies and, you know, tax credits and otherwise to address the housing issues in the states. We're talking about rent. We're talking about home ownership. And he's doing lots of things. And then we have Trump bloviating and coming out and talking about, oh, he knows housing because he's built so many houses. But what is, what is that? That's not, he's not, what is he, build some towers? And how are they doing?
Well, if anybody actually investigates the history of Donald Trump as a landlord or as a builder, I mean, he would be very embarrassed because most of the time he has shafted people who put down payments on his buildings. Very often, nothing happens. They lose money. It ends up in court. Donald Trump is not really a builder. He's a con man. That's what he's perfected, the art of conning people out of their money, not the art of building. I mean, when Joe Biden talks about the housing crisis and comes up with half a dozen important policies designed to help people afford rental and housing, and particularly at a time when interest rates are very high and mortgages are hard to come by, and young people can't get in the housing market. This is a big deal. Housing is probably the core of the anger that people have with the current economy right now. Inflation is coming down. Housing is a big deal. Biden has come up with a whole slew of possibilities. They're not going to be enacted, Heather, not in this Congress, obviously. Yeah. He's going to, you know, use his bully pulpit to push these policies. Donald Trump, what does he do in his rallies? He says, I know housing. I have made millions of beautiful homes. And that's obviously a lie. Mm. But you know, here's the problem. Policy, Donald Trump does not understand policy. He doesn't talk policy, doesn't think policy, he has never read a policy paper. People who were in the White House with him say that he never read anything. Right. So he doesn't even have an understanding of policy. You got a graduate degree in public policy. Am I right?
That's true. I did not see him on campus. I did not see him in my study groups. I didn't even see him at the happy hours.
Well, he got a degree from the Wharton School. And,
oh, that's right.
And professors there purportedly said he was the stupidest student they'd ever had.
What he represents is part of the problem in the housing market. These big private sector actors, whether it's, you know, individual LLCs or private equity firms or hedge funds that are coming in and they're buying up so much housing and they're driving up the prices. And we, you know, Wall Street did not help with the housing bubble of 2008, as we all know. And now we are watching this happen. I read some statistic that said by 2030, private equity and hedge funds might own up to 40% of single family homes.
But remember, Heather, that the housing crisis of 2008, the housing bubble, was a product of Wall Street all of this money into housing, really getting people to take out mortgages who could not possibly afford it. And then, of course, when the housing bubble bursts and there's all these foreclosures, and Wall Street sweeps in, gets these homes at
fire sale prices,
and then turns around and buys up more and more housing, the housing stock, and then rents it out. This is one of the things that Biden really should do. And there's already been in the House and in the Senate, Democrats have introduced a legislation to get private equity and all of these hedge funds out of housing, out of the housing market.
Yep, exactly. Now, so we wanted to talk about Bernie Sanders has proposed a law that talks about over 4 years moving the 40-hour work week to 32 hours. Everyone gets the same salary. And it's been talked about over the years, right? This obviously doesn't apply to contract workers, but you are a former Secretary of Labor. I mean, come on. Can we talk about this, please? What do you think? Is it realistic?
Okay, I love Bernie Sanders. And I love when he says something that sounds radical until people start thinking about it. And they say, well, wait a minute, 32-hour work week? How long have we had a 40-hour work week with time and a half for overtime? But the last time that was changed was 1940. And since 1940, the productivity of the typical American worker has soared. And so, but the wages of the typical American worker adjusted for inflation haven't really soared along with productivity. So it makes a lot of sense. Why not move to a 32-hour work week with time and a half for overtime, and you don't get paid any less than you did with a 40-hour work week? It's going to be hard to implement for the reasons you stated, because, you know, something like 20% of Americans right now are contract workers. They are really free agents, in a sense. They don't work for anybody. Some of them have been moved off of the employment roles of various companies and forced into private contractor kind of relationships. So they would not get the benefit of any of this if we did move to a 32-hour work week. But it's not crazy. It's an important discussion to have.
Yeah. And it's about, you know, the way change happens is you introduce it and it happens over time. It doesn't happen overnight. And this is the way to go about that.
Exactly. And it's a good, I think most workers, if you ask them, if you could keep the same pay you now have and move it to 32 hours. Would you like that? And of course, most people will say yes. Interestingly, studies are showing that even employers who have moved from a 40 to a 32-hour work week, they like it too. They get more loyalty. They get more productivity out of their workers. It's a win-win proposition in most cases.
I remember there was that study out of, I think it was the UK, but we need more studies because obviously so few places are doing it that the sample sizes are kind of teensy and the examples are kind of weird. So hopefully more will do it and prove the case for the rest of everybody.
Well, there are a lot of, Heather, I think the point is there are a lot of good ideas out there, like a 32-hour work week, like, for example, universal basic income and guaranteed jobs. I mean, you know, the progressive part of the political continuum is coming up with all kinds of very important ideas for average working people. But as long as the Republicans have one of the chambers of Congress, it's going to be very difficult to get anything done. This is why the big, big background question is, can we control, we Democrats, progressives, can we regain control of both houses of Congress with a Democratic president, hopefully Joe Biden?
The
stakes are huge.
The stakes are so huge. And I'm so tired of all the MAGA ridiculousness.
Is it MAGA or MAGA?
I thought it was MAGA, but people say MAGA. Should we find that out? Can people tell us in the comments?
Where have you been the past few days that people say MAGA?
Well, I did visit some family in the South, and people say MAGA down there.
You say tomato, I say tomato, MAGA.
I'd rather say none of it in terms of that. I'd rather never have to say that acronym again. I have a question for you that I thought, this is kind of ridiculous. What was your first job? Do I know this? I don't think I do. Can you reveal it for us?
I'll tell you, one of my first jobs was working as a disc jockey in Flint, Michigan. And it was because I was so young that they gave me the midnight to 4 a.m. shift.
Wow, you must have been really doing a great job.
And wait a minute, the station policy was you could only play the same top 10 songs when you were a disc jockey.
For four hours?
So there I was in the middle of the night from midnight to 4 a.m. in Flint, Michigan, playing Love Sweet Love. I ain't got no satisfaction.
Ooh, that's a goodie.
Well, no, after you play it 1,000 times, it starts getting a little bit. Did you have,
I don't understand how old radio stations used to work. Did you have records or dials and tunes?
Most of them were records. Occasionally they were taped. But in those days it was mostly records. And I would, you know, it was just like the old disc jockey. But I was so bored. I was going out of my, cranium with boredom. I said, the next person to call in, I'll give you $25. And make it a little bit of a talk show.
Right.
Heather, nobody called in.
I was scared you were going to say that. No. $25 back then is not nothing.
I went to $100. Nobody ever called in. It suddenly dawned on me. This was the summer of 64 that I was there alone in Flint, Michigan, in a radio studio for midnight.
What were your call signals or whatever we call that?
Oh, it was WTRX, the big sound of music and news in Flint, Michigan. And nobody was listening.
What's the word for that? What is the word for those four? I forget, for those four letters you say on radio. It's not call. Is it call signal?
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway,
so that's my. And how about your first job?
Oh, mine's not as good as that one. I mean, I babysat. Most women my age at one point babysat. So I babysat starting very early.
I babysat too.
Did you babysit? And then I worked at a ticket office at a theater, not movie, but plays. And then I had that for half the week. It was in my summer after senior year. I had a few other jobs, but then I worked in the mall at a store that sold puzzles and games. And because I could juggle, they made me go out into the mall and do juggling. And so I was juggling in the mall.
Can you juggle for us?
I don't have any items in front of me to juggle. Okay, otherwise, I would. Let me see.
I want to say to everybody,
next week, I have these expensive mics to juggle with.
Heather Lofthouse is going to juggle for us.
I can't, these are like super expensive mics. I can't do it. I'll bring something to juggle with. But yeah, but then I was terrified I was going to see all the, you know, my friends in the mall juggling like a big clown. But it was whatever, paid the bills.
The first book I ever tried to sell, you know, when I wrote a book, I was in the store window in Madison, Wisconsin, a bookstore window with a light on me, you know, come in and buy Robert Reich's book. And it was just another repeat of the same experience in Flint, Michigan. Nobody came in.
I bet you had at least one caller for your book. You had to have. I bet someone bought your book.
Very
Flint, nice. Michigan, I'm not sure what happened there. Anyway, at least we ended on a fun note. I like this week.
Well, there's a lot to be worried about. But I, you know, as I said on Substack this past week, I really am nauseously optimistic.
I saw that.
I get nauseous when I think about the possibility that Trump could be our next president. But I basically feel more and more optimistic about it.
Good.
So, Heather Lofthouse, thank you once again for joining me, Saturday Coffee Clutch. Everybody out there, thank you once again for joining us on this Saturday Coffee Clutch. John, I just want to say, John, congratulations on the birth of your son, Anita. I hope you're feeling better. And Georgia, happy 100th birthday. So, I mean, there are a lot of things going on we need to celebrate out there.
Very cool. Yes.
Everybody have a great week.